We extend Christian greetings to each one. Welcome each one to this part of the service. I can say I was also richly blessed being here already. Brother Brandon sharing a question, why are we here? And I hope that we are here to worship God, to be encouraged or to give encouragement, to be strengthened in our faith. In the past few weeks, I was also confronted with a question. Why am I a Christian? Why did I become a Christian? That question was followed up. Was it so that Christ would serve me or that I may serve him? And sometimes I think we do good to examine ourselves. You know, why did I become a Christian? Have I left my first love? Today, as we come through a message, I would like to look at choices and consequences. God allows you to make choices in life. And a lot of people choose many different things. But man does not have the power to escape the consequences of his choices. God, in his mercy, does sometimes not make us suffer some of the consequences because of his love, his grace, his mercy. But man himself does not have the power to escape those consequences. Question came up in our class, and I was blessed being there, the many thoughts that were shared, about why did the children have to suffer? And I made a comment there that I have often thought about. Of all the godless people in the world today, people that have never heard about God, at one point in time, their ancestors were God-fearing people. And because of choices that they made, the consequences coming after, the generations have lost out. And when we look at why Israel had a cursed thing, you know, God is looking for a people who in their heart worship him. And in the Ten Commandments, thou shalt have no other gods before me. And as we come in worship today, I would like to encourage us to look within ourselves. What are the motives that drive me? What really is in there? Do I have idols in there? What motivates me? The reason that I think that Achan was a curse, because when he saw that wealthy stuff that he stole from Jericho, in his heart he longed for that above valuing being obedient to God. God had given very specific instructions concerning Jericho, and he did not value that as coming from God and who God is. You can turn your Bibles, if you care, to follow along to Matthew chapter 25, and while you turn to that, I'd like to give just a little bit of history. Back in the days of Noah, it says in the Bible in Genesis that by Noah's sons was the whole earth overspread. Noah himself lived to be 950 years old. He lived 350 years after the flood. Noah's sons were Shem, Ham, and Japheth. And the descendants or generations of Japheth, Ham, and Shem comes in Genesis chapter 10. And then following those descendants that it gives in the genealogical account there, it talks about the Tower of Babel. And the Tower of Babel, it says also there that Nimrod, who was a grandson of Ham, it says he was a mighty hunter, and it also alludes that he was king of Babel. In Genesis 11, it talks about how in Babel they decided to build a tower whose top would reach heaven, but then how that the Lord confounded their languages and scattered them. I enjoy using a calculator and looking at some of those accounts and how old they were, and putting that stuff together, I came up with that the scattering or the confounding of the languages happened probably about 101 years after the flood. And after that account, it gives again the descendants of Shem, but not the other two sons. And Abraham was of the descendants of Shem. And it's interesting to me that Abraham was 10 generations down, and the earth was overspread, I think, a lot faster back then than what it is now, because people did not die off so fast, so quickly. They lived to be old. And so according to my calculations that I figured here, coming out of this account in Genesis, Abram was born about 292 years after the flood. And according to the calculations that it gives there, it could be that Abraham was alive at the same time that Noah still lived, and that Abram could have been 58 years old when Noah died. And so people did not die off as quickly. And that's 10 generations down from Noah that Abraham was, Abram. And Abram had two brothers, Haran and Nahor. His father was Terah. Haran had a son, Lot, and a daughter, Milcah. And then he died. Milcah later married Nahor, and then his son Lot went with Abram and Terah. Milcah and Lot, brother and sister, children of Haran. Later, Nahor and Milcah had a son called Bethuel, who then had Laban and Rebekah. And Rebekah is the one who married Isaac. And later, Laban's daughters, Leah and Rachel, were then later married to Jacob, who was Isaac and Rebekah's son. I might come back and pick up there a little bit later on here. I'd like to turn to Matthew chapter 25. It's a very familiar account here about the 10 virgins. I would like to read the first 13 verses here of Matthew chapter 25. Then shall the kingdom of heaven be likened unto 10 virgins which took their lamps and went forth to meet the bridegroom. And five of them were wise, and five were foolish. They that were foolish took their lamps and took no oil with them. But the wise took oil in their vessels with their lamps. While the bridegroom tarried, they all slumbered and slept. And at midnight there was a cry made, Behold, the bridegroom cometh, go ye out to meet him. Then all those virgins arose and trimmed their lamps. And the foolish said unto the wise, Give us of your oil, for our lamps are gone out. But the wise answered, saying, Not so, lest there be not enough for us and you. But go ye rather to them that sell and buy for yourselves. And while they went to buy, the bridegroom came, and they that were ready went in with him to the marriage, and the door was shut. Afterward came also the other virgins, saying, Lord, Lord, open to us. But he answered and said, Verily I say unto you, I know you not. Watch therefore, for ye know neither the day nor the hour wherein the Son of Man cometh. What a sad occasion for those five virgins who were not ready. They were too late when the bridegroom came. As we look at ourselves, we have church services, we have socials, we have gatherings that we come and go to and attend, and sometimes we're late. And by all appearances, there's not really any serious consequences for that. But if we're late when our Lord returns, there's going to be very serious consequences. That will be forever too late. We might think that there's no serious consequences, but I would like to just share this. We are being watched by our young people. Our young people are creating within themselves a value system. And it's a natural inclination for man to degenerate, if you will, our value systems insofar as how we value God's word. That is a natural inclination, and others are watching us. Do we value being on time? The consequences might not be immediate for some of our actions, but they will come later. And it will have its effect, our value system. We do good to examine ourselves. Is our value system as God would have it to be? I'd like to step over across the page. Here, verse 36 of chapter 24, it says, "But of that day and hour knoweth no man, no, not the angels of heaven, but my Father only." This is talking about the day of the Lord when he comes. "But as the days of Noah were, so shall also the coming of the Son of Man be. For as in the days that were before the flood, they were eating and drinking and marrying and giving in marriage until the day that Noah entered into the ark, and knew not until the flood came and took them all away. So shall also the coming of the Son of Man be." So I would like to encourage us, examine ourselves, make sure that we're ready, that we are following the directives that God, through his Son Jesus Christ, has given us in his word in the Bible. I would now like to turn back to Genesis and thinking about choices and consequences. After the scattering of the people there in Babel, it gives again the descendants of Shem. And Abraham and Lot, because Abram's brother, Haran, had died, Lot kind of stuck with Abram. I'm not sure what had happened to Haran. I do know what some history books give it, but we'll leave that for now. But coming out of that, Lot stuck with Abram, and Terah did too. But God had told Abram to get out of there, that land, and go to Canaan. And they came to the city of Haran, and there Abram's father was not well enough. It seems like they stayed over there, and then Terah died there in Haran. And then after Abraham took care of his dad there, then him and Lot and all their possessions, they traveled on. They came into the land of Canaan. And coming into the land of Canaan, there was a serious famine there. And so they were not there that long. They journeyed on down into Egypt. And they had some interactions there with Egypt, some not so good. But then when they left Egypt, Abram and Lot and all their possessions, they traveled together. And it says that Abram was very rich in cattle, silver, and gold. And Lot also had many flocks and herds. And the famine that was in Canaan was over when they left Egypt. And going on out there, there was much grass there, but the herds of Abram and Lot were so great that the land could not contain so many. And so the herdmen of Abraham and Lot started to quarrel amongst themselves. And so Abram told Lot that it's not good. You know, we need to separate ourselves. I'd like to read a few verses here. Genesis 13, verse 8 through 12. "And Abram said unto Lot, Let there be no strife, I pray thee, between me and thee, and between my herdmen and thy herdmen, for we be brethren. Is not the whole land before thee? Separate thyself, I pray thee, from me. If thou wilt take the left hand, then I will go to the right. Or if thou depart to the right hand, then I will go to the left. And Lot lifted up his eyes and beheld all the plain of Jordan, that it was well watered everywhere before the Lord destroyed Sodom and Gomorrah, even as the garden of the Lord, like the hand of land of Egypt, as thou comest unto Zoar. Here it says that it was even as the garden of the Lord. Makes me wonder if that was like referring to the Garden of Eden. It was so well watered. And then verse 11, then Lot chose him all the plain of Jordan, and Lot journeyed east, and they separated themselves the one from the other. And Abram dwelled in the land of Canaan, and Lot dwelled in the cities of the plain and pitched his tent towards Sodom. But the men of Sodom were wicked and sinners before the Lord exceedingly. I do not know whether Lot came under a bad influence in Egypt or what happened, but it seemed like the city of Sodom had a pull on him. It says he pitched his tent towards Sodom, and it makes me wonder if whenever he erected his tent, if he erected the doorway be turned towards Sodom so he could sit at the door of his tent and watch what went on there. But it seemed whenever he moved his tent, he closer and closer, and it wasn't long till he came into the city of Sodom. And he lived in the city. And then a time came that several kings came and attacked that city and took a lot of those people captive, and Lot and all his possessions were taken captive with them. And then it took intervention by Abraham. A servant escaped and came and told Abraham all that had happened, and so Abraham got his household together, and he pursued after those kings and overtook them and defeated them and brought Lot and all his people back again and delivered them back. And it seems like to me that that should have been a wake-up call to Lot. But it does not seem that it impacted him, and he chose to stay in Sodom. That was a choice he made. And I don't know, it says that Lot had many cattle, and I wonder if he provided a lot of beef. And it was probably a good choice that he made. You know, Abraham allowed him to choose. You would think that God, having talked to Abraham and telling him that he was giving him Canaan, that he would have told Lot that, you know, you have to take what's left. God promised all this to me. But no, he stepped back and he allowed his nephew Lot to choose. And Lot chose the best part for himself. Well, you know, that sounds like just good business sense. You know, and very likely he was able to sell a lot of cattle to the Sodomites for food. And he ended up living there. And again made his home there after he was delivered by Abraham. And his family got bigger, his children got married. And then the time came that the wickedness of Sodom was so great that God was going to destroy it. And so with God wanting to destroy Sodom and Gomorrah and everything, he sent his angel to Abraham to let him know what he was going to do. Abraham was special to him. And so Abraham asked him, he said, are you going to destroy the righteous with the wicked? You know, Abraham knew Lot was there. He said, if there were 50 righteous people there, would you still destroy the town? And the Lord told him, no. He said, if there's 50 righteous people there, he would not destroy the city. And Abraham thought within himself, well, maybe there's not that many righteous people there. And he kept asking God different numbers and different numbers, and finally came all the way down to the number 10. He said, would you destroy the city if there were 10 righteous people there? Surely there would be 10 righteous people there. Surely Lot would have influenced that many people. And the Lord told Abraham that if there are 10 righteous people there in the city of Sodom, he would, for their sake, not destroy that city. And then they departed there and went to Sodom. And I will not elaborate much about what all went on there. But they came into the city, And Lot took them into his home. And they told him that they were here to destroy the city. And they told Lot to get your family and everybody else that he wants to, and they need to get out of the city because God is going to destroy the city. Well, Lot had married children here. And so he went and tried to talk to his son-in-laws that God was going to destroy the city. We need to leave. And they just looked at Lot as if he was trying to mock them or something. Wow, their businesses, their families, and everything they had going on was here. They don't think that he knows what he's talking about. That's just me thinking here what they might have thought. But Lot was serious. And finally, they would not listen to him. And so it says that these angels took hold of him by the hand and got them outside the city. Lot, his wife, and two daughters that he still had at home. And he told them to flee to the mountains. Well, Lot kind of got used to city life. And going to the mountains, that's a hard climb. So he asked them permission whether he could just go to the little town of Zoar. And they said, yeah, if that's what you want to, you can go to the town of Zoar. But do not look back. And so Lot, his wife, and two daughters, they were going to the town of Zoar. And somewhere along the way, his wife looked back. And instantly she turned into a pillar of salt. And just like that. And I don't know if Lot found out immediately when it happened. Was she in front of him or was he in front of her leading the way? I don't know how all that was. But they were told to not look back. And in my mind, I wonder, you know, she had family back there. But she looked back and was not supposed to. There were consequences. You know, I'm talking about Lot here, but there were so many other people that were impacted by him and that, you know, we come across other people. But everybody has choices to make, and there are consequences for those choices. But Lot continued on to the city of Zoar, and then when he looked and saw the smoke going up from Sodom and Gomorrah, he got scared, and him and his daughters, they left, and they went for the mountains after all. And then, coming to the mountains, it seems like Lot lost everything that he had except for his two daughters. Anything that he would have left back in Sodom was destroyed in the fire. If I have it right, the offspring of his oldest daughter were the Moabites, and his youngest daughter, the offspring of them were the Ammonites. Those were the descendants of Lot. But Lot could not escape the consequences of the choices he made. And you know, being in the life that he lived, might have thought it was good business sense to get the best for himself. But I would like to encourage us all in going through life. It's very important to always have God be a part of your decisions. God alone knows what the future holds. God alone knows best how and what we should do with choices that we need to make. I'd like to go over to the chapter of Judges and relate about Samson a little bit. The story here starts in Judges chapter 13, if you want to kind of follow along. There was a man in the tribe of Dan by the name of Manoah, and I have not read what his wife's name was. In the Bible here, she's called his wife and also called woman. But Manoah's wife was barren, and they didn't have any children. And so they... I'm not exactly for sure what all they were involved in. I gather they were probably farmers, but I'm not 100% sure there. But anyhow, one day an angel came to Manoah's wife and told her that they were going to have a child. And He said that this child would be a Nazarite and that never should a razor come to his head. His hair were not to be cut. And she was to keep herself from any kind of wine or strong drink, grape juice or whatever, anything from the vine, to not have any of that. And he gave her various instructions. And when the angel left her, I think she thought it was just a man. Some man came and talked to her. Well, anyhow, she went and told her husband about this, and he was excited about it. And so he went and he petitioned to God. He prayed to God that God would send this man again and tell them how to order the child. And so God answered his prayer and sent this angel again to them. And the angel again came to the woman, and she went, ran, and got her husband, and he came. And then this angel told them that it's very important that they obey what he told his wife earlier. And the man was very thankful, and he was also hospitable, and he wanted to feed this man. And so he asked this man if he would give him something to eat, if he would eat. And this angel, it was an angel, he said, no, he would not eat anything. But he said, if you want to give anything, you need to offer it to God. And so Manoah went and did an offering on his altar on a rock. And when the fire on this offering was going up towards heaven, it says this angel did wondrously. And all of a sudden, this angel was in the flame, and he ascended up into the heavens in the flame from the altar and disappeared just like that. And then Manoah knew that this was, he thought this was God and that he was going to die. But his wife consoled him there and said, no, they're not going to die. This angel said that they would have a son. And so she had a son, called his name Samson. Samson is as a young boy, I really wonder what all went on in his life, because he was never allowed to cut his hair. And I don't know, was he ridiculed, belittled? I would like to encourage you school children, always be nice to each other. Never look down on anyone. I don't know what happened to Samson, but for some reason, it seems like Samson felt the need to go to the enemy camp. Israel was subservient to the Philistines during this time. And for some reason, Samson felt the need to associate with the Philistines rather than with the Israelites. And so he was down to the Philistines, and he met this girl that he liked in the city of Timnath. And he told his mom and dad to get her for him to wife. And they pleaded with him, why can't you find a girl among the Israelites? But Samson made a choice. He said, get her for me. And so the arrangements were made, and they were married. They came together for a feast. And one day when Samson was going down there, and his mom and dad, and I think they weren't quite together there, Samson going down there, it says the Spirit of the Lord came on him and was with him. But one time he was going along there, and a lion came out and roared on him. And it said the Spirit of the Lord came on him so mightily, he tore that lion as if he were just a small baby goat. It was so easy for him. And it was a big lion, I think. And there were different things that Samson did. And then at his wedding there, he put forth a riddle. And it had to do with this lion with bees and stuff and honey. I won't get into that too much for the sake of time. But anyhow, he told his wife, or the Philistines actually came and told his wife that she needs to find out the answer to the riddle, because Samson had had told them this riddle, and he said that if they would tell him the answer to the riddle, he would give them 30 changes of raiment, 30 sheets, and also 30 suits to wear. But he said if they don't give him the answer, that they would owe him that. And so they came to his wife and told her, if you do not find us the answer to this riddle, we're going to burn you and your dad in fire. And so she pleaded with Samson to tell her the answer. And he said, why should I tell you? I didn't even tell my mom and dad. But she kept on pleading with him and pleading with him. And finally, he told her the answer. And so she told the Philistines so that they wouldn't burn her and her dad. And so when the appointed time came, they told Samson the answer to that, and it angered him. It's probably humiliating to him. How many times have you, and I remember my own life, many times that I was angered by something and I wanted to get even. Get revenge. Get even. And that's what Samson's desire was here. But the Bible tells us that vengeance belongs to God. We should not try to get even. We need to love, and we overcome evil with good. When they told him this riddle, Samson went out, and he found 30 Philistines, and he slew them and took their clothes, and he used that to pay his debt to them. And then, because he was upset, he just went home. And because he went home, his wife's dad thought that, well, evidently he doesn't want her. And I don't know what all their customs were. And so he went and gave her to wife to one of Samson's friends, so-called friends, if you will. And then later, after a while, it was during the wheat harvest, Samson came back to see his wife. He wanted to go in with her, and her dad wouldn't let him go in. Said, no, he said, you can't do that. You left here, and I gave her to one of your friends. And he said, she has a younger sister. You can take her for a wife. Well, this did not suit Samson at all. And I would like to encourage us. The Bible says, be not unequally yoked with unbelievers. You see, unbelievers do not share the same values that God's people do. And so it is not compatible. Well, Samson got so angry that this happened. He went out, and of course the Spirit of God was with him. He caught 300 foxes, tied their tails together, and put a firebrand between their tails and turned them loose through the Philistines' wheat fields. And a lot of their wheat was already in shocks, and it burned I don't know how many acres up of their wheat fields. Well, this angered the Philistines. And so they went and wondered, why did Samson do this? And they said, well, his father-in-law went and gave his wife to another man. That's what made him do it. And so they went and burned her and her father after all. So she did end up getting burned. And when they came and did all this, Samson, it says, Samson slew many of them. And then after killing many of them, he went and lived by a rock called Edom. And I don't know how old that was. He probably had crevices and stuff where he could get under, and he lived there. And it says he judged the Israelites for 20 years. And Samson was getting older in life, but it says he judged them for 20 years. And Jesus said that a man should not put his hand to the plow and look back. He said, a man that puts his hand to the plow and looking back is not fit for the kingdom of heaven, for the kingdom of God. And I don't know if that's what Samson did. But it says he judged Israel for 20 years, and then he went down and saw a lady friend down in with the Philistines again in the town of Gaza. And when the Gazites found out that he was there, they thought, man, this is our chance to capture this man. And so they closed the gates and thought, well, the next day when it gets light, they're going to kill him. And that night at midnight, Samson rose up, and when he came and saw the gates were shut, he lifted the gates and posts and the bar that held them together and everything up out and walked away with it, ripped it out of whatever it was. And it says he went and carried it up to on top of a hill close to Hebron. And if you look on the map, that could have been like 15 or 20 miles away. He didn't carry him just a short distance and get out. He carried him way, miles away. And escaped that way. But then later he went down to the town of Sorek, and this was his undoing. He fell in love with a lady named Delilah. When people ask me about Samson, for some reason you think Samson and Delilah. Well, Delilah was the last girlfriend as such that he had. Well, he fell in love with Delilah, and Delilah, she loved money. Remember what I said about not having the same value system. The Philistine lords went and told Delilah. They found out that Samson was friends with her. They told Delilah that we'll pay you a huge sum of money if you find out the secret of his strength so that we can get him. And so Delilah really pressured Samson to find out where his strength came from. To start with, Samson lied, told her various different things, and there's one part that I skipped here. When he was down there by the rock, let me back up just a little, down there living in that rock right there, and he had burned the Philistines' fields, they sent, I don't know, was it thousands of them went over into the land of Judah, spread themselves out there, and the people from Judah asked, what are you doing up here? You know, they were subservient to them. What are you doing here? They said, we're here to get Samson. And Samson was down by that rock. And so the people of Judah said, well, you all don't do anything. Let us go get him. And so they went down to see Samson and told him what transpired. And Samson said, well, I'll allow you to tie me up, providing you promise me that you will not fall on me yourselves. And I wonder if he had a bad experience with of his own people that he had to go to the Philistines for his fellowship. I don't know. But they promised they wouldn't harm him, but they're going to deliver him to the Philistines. And so he allowed them to take two new cords and bind him really tight. And then they delivered him to the Philistines. And when he came up to the Philistines, they shouted at him. I imagine they were very mad, but it says they shouted at him. And he ripped those cords apart just like they were flax. Ripped them apart, and it says he found a jawbone there of an ass, and it says he slew 1,000 men. And I can only imagine how desperately those Philistines that wanted a piece of Samson, how desperately they were to try to get away from him. But he took that jawbone and killed 1,000 men. And then I assumed that his enemies were gone and he was sorely thirsty. And then he had a prayer to God and God answered his prayer. And he caused water to come out of the jawbone that he had used to kill these people. And he drank out of that. And he was revived again. That is just another miracle that happened there. But anyhow, then coming back to Delilah, it says that she vexed him to where he just about couldn't handle it anymore. And finally, he shared his heart with her. And he told her that never has anybody cut his hair. But if somebody would cut his hair off, he wouldn't be stronger than any other man. And she knew of a certainty that Samson finally told her the truth. And so she first of all caused him to fall asleep. And then she got a man to come in and shave off. He had his hair in 7 locks. I don't know, was that seven braids? But this man came in and he cut off all seven of those braids and shaved his head. And then she woke him up, said, "Samson, Samson, the Philistines are on you." And he woke up and he thought he'd shake himself loose and get out there just like any other time. But it said the Spirit of the Lord had left him and he didn't even know it. And they bound him in fetters of brass and he could not shake loose. He did not have more strength than an ordinary man. First thing they did is they punched out his eyes. You know, I mentioned about maybe they weren't nice to him. I don't know what happened, but for some reason, Samson felt the need to go to the Philistines for his fellowship, whatever that was. But they punched out his eyes, and then they took him to a prison where he would grind grain. And in my mind, there was probably a big millstone with a hole in the middle that was set up like a wheel, and they would probably have a center pole with a post sticking through the hole of that thing. And Samson would be out on the end of that stick and walking in a circle. But he was totally blind. He couldn't see. And I don't know how long he did that, but Samson had a lot of time to think. And I am convinced in my heart that he seriously repented of the choices, the foolish choices that he had made in life. And what he was doing was paying the consequences of those choices, those bad choices he made. But it says while he was there in the prison, his hair started growing back. I don't know how long his hair grew back, but then a time in the year came that the Philistine lords came together and they wanted to celebrate and do offerings, a big offering to their god Dagon. They had an idol that they called Dagon, and they wanted to do a big sacrifice to him because he had delivered Samson, who had killed so many of their people. They said he had delivered Samson into their hands, and so they wanted to come together and have this big celebration. And they had this big building that they had where they were holding this celebration, probably in the temple of their idol Dagon. And to really make it really good, they came up with the idea to bring Samson up here so they could make sport of him. And in my mind, to make sport of him, they would bring him up here so they could make fun of him and just really gloat over him. Well, Samson had a young lad that led him about because he couldn't see. And so this lad would take a hold of him by the hand and he would follow him because he was blind. We should always appreciate our eyesight. There are people who don't have any. We should always thank God for that. Samson's was taken away, and it was a consequence of choices he made. Well, Samson, when they were doing all this, he spoke to this little boy and said, "Would you take me to the pillars that support this house, that this house rests on?" There was two pillars that were main weight carriers for this house, that I may lean on them. And so this boy took him up there. And I want to say this carefully. I do not know if this happened or not. But I remember as a young boy when my mom related this story to me. She said that just maybe Samson told this lad to run. I like to think maybe he did. But Samson, he prayed to God one more time. That God would give him strength. And God answered his prayer. And it says that he bowed himself there by those pillars. And I don't know if he pulled them in or if he pushed them out. But the house came down. And it says that Samson killed more people at his death than what he did during his lifetime. And today, Samson's name is in Hebrews chapter 11, mentioned as one of the heroes of faith. There's one thing that I would like to focus on coming out of that, and that is the grace of God and the mercy of God. When we make bad choices, as Samson did, it was because of the grace and mercy of God that his name is recorded there as one of the heroes of faith. I hope and trust that all of us can have our names written in the Lamb's Book of Life. Not because of anything that we have done, but it's because of what our God has done. May we all be true and faithful in our callings of life, and may we always have God included and be a part of any decisions that we make, that his smile and blessing may rest on us. Let's kneel for a word of prayer.